So, once again, I'm not castigating his personality. I'm merely pointing out the incongruity of it. Okay, but what I think we can also say is that Christian conviction says to us, yes, this is true. All human beings are created equal. Mm-hmm. All human beings are created in the image and likeness of God, whether I like them or don't like them, whether they're of my tribe or not of my tribe. Even if they're women. Sorry. Yes. I'm joking, of course. Well, I'm serious, but...
Thank you for bringing it up.
So you're talking about the idea that, you know, we as Christians are called to not only kind of, I guess, mitigate the problem, but work to ameliorate it entirely, right, in terms of social issues.
If we can.
Inshallah, if it's possible.
Structural change.
So how are we called to be reacting when, I mean, in a lot of modern issues, it is really Christians are the ones who are vilifying other people. Yes, we disagree with what they're doing or their actions or their politics or any whatever, but oftentimes you see the way that Christians react is we are the ones vilifying them, we are the ones causing harm. So in light of our call to serve them and to love them and to see them as made in the image of likeness of God, how can we individually do it, and how can we encourage our brothers and sisters within the church to do it as well?
Well, I do think it starts individually, and I think also then in conversation amongst our circle of friends, acquaintances, whatever. Unfortunately, the climate of the times is such that one of the axioms, so to speak, of contemporary thought is that if you are a Christian, you are automatically guilty of prejudice. That without having any evidence from you personally, by virtue of your association, you're guilty. You know, when the Lord was upset with Israel, you know, he said, I will visit to the seventh generation the sins of the father upon his children. That's not fair. Later on he said, no more shall it be said, the father has eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set upon edge, for the man's sin shall be his own. And so I think, you know, and I'm not trying to say that there's an evolution of religious belief or that God changes his mind, but I think what I am saying is that we have to, in a sense, we're under a burden to disprove the commonplace acceptance that because we're Christian, we automatically are homophobic or Islamophobic or fill in whatever phobia you want to call. Guilty before there's any evidence either way. And that's an uphill climb. But I do think, it, as St. John Chrysostom says, let us win them by our way of life. And if we show forth that sort of prejudice, then indeed I think it is fair for us to be called prejudiced. But on the contrary, I don't think that we should be called prejudiced by people who don't know us. Yes.
So I don't know if this is the right moment to posit it, but I think that given all that you've asked of us and have presented thus far, I've always claimed before this moment that if we have a representative government, if I'm electing those in my city, in my county, the water department, dog catcher,
school board.
But also all the way up, that if I am struggling to fulfill the commandments and the spirit of the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes of I was hungry and you fed me or you didn't, naked or homeless and you clothed me or took me in or didn't, then if I'm voting for a representative government, and I'll put it in a little parenthetically, if I for instance, I'm tempted to be a one-issue voter and to care about abortion primarily.
Okay.
But then how do I not care about all the rest of the commandments when I'm electing someone? And how do I not really want to be motivated by that vision? But also, given that I consider all of these choices often to be between evils. And some people say, if you vote for the lesser evil, you're still voting for evil. That's a whole big discussion.
Yeah. So what do you do? Crawl under a rock,
yeah,
right?
Some of my really left friends quote that on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
But however, I just have to say that for me, if on one hand, I'll just be blunt and transparent. On one hand on the scale, we have the death of unborn children for personal choices that are not just life and health. And on the other hand, we have the whole destruction of the planet's ecosystem. We have the disenfranchisement and evils against Native peoples all around the world of our history of taking advantage, going in and making devil's deals, and now even cozying up to dictators. I'm sorry.
It's not just now, Tim. But anyway, go ahead.
No. I said. I can quote 100 years of history on that. But then I'll just say I'm openly advocating that in we have to somehow weigh that. And maybe you have to hold your nose, but I think we have to choose with clear eyes and a sober mind and as little outrage as we can muster, you know. And so I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, well, you've got your finger on a very sore place. And I think that probably, and just a second, I'll take some other people, but I think that we all have the experience a certain amount of powerlessness about the circumstances of our public life. And that things are not going the way we would like to see. I said we wouldn't discuss immigration, but I will say this.
Our bishops.
Yeah. That think about Holy Friday services. Give me this stranger. Christ is identified with the stranger, you know, and as once again, as St. John Chrysostom says, it's not the goodness of the poor, but it's their need that we have to respond to.
As a white guy with a beard and wearing overalls all day, I'm a plumber. We were talking about, you know, Christians being tarred with this sort of same suspicion or brush. I just wrote something last night. In fact, I wrote a lot of what you just said today.
Oh, good. Thank God.
Very interesting. But what I said, and I was arguing about something else, or presenting something, about people of color and Latino culture and immigrants. In my little town of 40,000, where every day is in front of my house, all these muscle cars and pickups and hot rods line up with huge American flags. And I know a lot of those people. I know how they think, what their vote is. It's pretty predictable. So when I'm at Safeway and I'm meeting someone of color or an immigrant, they don't meet my gaze. Huh. But if I reach out as a brother and I say hi, if I acknowledge them, suddenly there's this big transformation, because their experience of who I'm likely to be is somebody who is of a certain mind about them, who has been taught a lot of hate, who's been taught a lot of suspicion, who's been taught fear. And so I feel like, just as a human, it's incumbent upon me, whenever possible, something that's not right, convenient, to reach out and change that just a tiny bit. And who knows, maybe a year later I'll talk to them for 20 minutes.
Exactly, and I think that's how we have to proceed. We have to proceed in face-to-face situations. Now, God gives some a larger platform. And if he has, then, like William Wilberforce, you should use it, you know. Thomas.
Forgive me. I don't want to change the subject. It is about government, but government has created this form of education And I know historically through my relatives who were involved in it, as to where it comes from Germany, and I think they have a different culture than we do, even though there's similar origins in a way, but having this document of our Constitution and so on changes everything. But the way that we're teaching in the schools that we create have these cohorts or cadres of very large numbers of students in each class, all of the same age. That's never been before. There's never been in the history before. Why do we think that we can educate this way? And I wonder what you would have to say.